Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Centennial Lecture Series, UP View from Outside. This afternoon's lecture is entitled Media Power and People Power, Citizens, Journalists, and the University in the Internet Age. We would like to repeat that all lectures will be beamed live to the following UP campuses: UP Manila, UP Los Baños, UP Visayas in Miag'ao, Cebu, and Tacloban, UP Mindanao, UP Baguio, and the UP Open University, and webcast through the internet for wider coverage. Audience from all over the world may also send in their questions later via Skype. Before we start the program, let me reiterate our request to our audience here in UP Diliman to please turn off your cell phones, as even the buzzing sounds from phones on silent mode will interfere with our sound system. Thank you. Please rise for the Philippine National Anthem.
Today, we hold another important event to celebrate UP Centennial. I think most of you are aware that we have lined up a series of events to mark this important milestone in the life of UP. We are organizing celebration activities, fundraising activities, and other activities to promote or project UP to the outside world. But the centerpiece of UP Centennial celebration is actually the UP Centennial Lecture Series. After all, UP is an academic institution, and because it is, a good part of commemorating its birthday is to get scholars, experts, and distinguished individuals to share with us their thoughts on UP or their views on burning issues of the day. Four categories make up the lecture series. One set of lectures will be delivered by insiders. They will present to us their views on UP, its successes and achievements, its faults and shortcomings. From them, we will get the view from inside. Another set will be delivered by those who are not part of our community, but who we believe take an interest in our university. They will share with us their insights on our vision, our mission, as they are perceived by the larger community. From them, we will get the view from outside. The third set of lectures will be by experts, both from UP and from other institutions, who will talk about national and global issues, such as global warming, poverty alleviation, indigenous peoples, state of Philippine education, status of women, peace and conflict resolution, etc. And finally, for the fourth category, we will feature distinguished individuals who through their life work have attained great distinction in their respective fields. as an institution tasked not just with producing new knowledge and disseminating existing knowledge, but also with the shaping of the minds of a future generation of leaders, we felt it was important for us to have this lecture series and provide our faculty and students with the opportunity to listen to what our scholars, experts, and invited guests have to say. Today, we have the privilege of listening to what a friend of UP has to say about the university. To our speaker, thank you for accepting our invitation to be part of this lecture series. We are honored by your presence. And to all who are here, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, President Roman. To introduce this afternoon's centennial lecturer, may I call on Professor of Communication and Dean of the College of Mass Communication, Dr. Elena E. Pernia.
Philippine media has played significant roles in the life of this nation and the University of the Philippines through its alumni who are among media's movers and shakers have helped shape Philippine media through the years. This afternoon's lecturer is one such mover and shaker, Philippine journalism's Sheila Coronel. Sheila Coronel was the 2003 Ramon Magsaysay Awardee for Journalism, Literature, and Creative Communication Arts. Her citation, the Ramon Magsaysay Award citation for her, is the best way to introduce her this afternoon. And I read from it. Even in a freewheeling democracy like the Philippines, can a free press truly stand free? Despite the absence of censorship, many factors mitigate against it. Newspapers and other media outlets tailor the news to sell and to advance the interests of their owners. Governments also seek to shape the news. So do politicians, tycoons, and the military. It is hard to stand free of such forces. Yet, Sheila Coronel believes the press must strive to do so. Philippine democracy needs an honest watchdog. As leader of the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism, she has strengthened her country's fourth estate. Filipinos tend to agree that the press should be feisty and free, and so it was in the early decades of Philippine independence. Coronel was only 14, however, when President Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law in 1972 and gagged the country's press. She took up political science at the University of the Philippines and intended to study the law. As her father became compelling to be a journalist, she never looked back. In the mid-80s, Coronel covered the movement to bring Marcos down and emerged as one of the bright young chroniclers of the EDSA Revolution. Afterwards, she sealed her reputation at the Manila Chronicle with probing stories presented in flawless English. Her work appeared in the New York Times and the Guardian of England. Growing frustrated with the constraints of conventional newsroom, in 1989, she and eight like-minded reporters founded the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism, PCIJ. Coronel became executive director only by default, she says. Even so, except for 1 year, she has led the center since. Investigative journalism requires painstaking research. Reporters conduct extensive interviews and spend hours and days poring over government, bank, and court documents, business records, and electronic databases. At the center, Coronel and her partners use techniques like these to develop in-depth stories of public interest and to probe subjects ordinarily held secret behind layers of power. They then marketed the stories through the mainstream press. Meanwhile, through fellowships and training programs, the center mentored younger reporters in the tools of the trade. Finding its stride under Coronel, PCIJ plumbed the state of the nation. It probed attempts by military power grabbers and their political allies to overthrow President Corazon Aquino. It exposed the role of officials and politicians and military men in massive illegal logging operations. It examined the suffocating grip of political clans and bosses on Philippine towns and provinces. And it exposed shocking corruption in the Supreme Court, in the President's cabinet, in government agencies, and in the country's newsrooms. The center spared no legitimate target, and year by year, it gained credibility. This became clear when PCIJ's scrupulous reporting played a key role in scrutinizing the anomalies of Joseph Estrada's presidency and helped set the stage for the president's eventual impeachment and dramatic ouster. Coronel avoids publicity and applies herself tirelessly to the work of the center. Hundreds of articles and many books and documentary films and PCIJ's own magazine testify to the center's remarkable productivity and influence under her management. They also reflect her hopeful commitment to Philippine democracy. "We are not as cynical about our audience as many others are," she says. "We believe in the power of an informed citizenry." In electing Sheila Coronel to receive the 2003 Ramon Magsaysay Award for Journalism, Literature, and the Creative Communication Arts, the Board of Trustees recognizes her leading a groundbreaking collaborative effort to develop investigative journalism as a critical component of democratic discourse in the Philippines. These days, Sheila Coronel finds herself as professor at the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia University and head of the Tony Stabile Center for Investigative Journalism there. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Sheila Coronel.
Thank you, Dean Pernia, for that wonderful introduction. President Roman, the other officers, officials of the University of the Philippines, faculty members, students, friends, fellow journalists, sa mga nasa ibang unit ng UP, sa Manila, sa Cebu, sa Baguio, magandang hapon sa inyong lahat. It's great to be here. UP is many things to me, but it is first and foremost the place where I practiced real journalism for the very first time. That was 30 years ago. In 1978, I joined the staff of the Philippine Collegian. That year, Ferdinand Marcos called the first election for a sham parliament, the Batasang Pambansa. Imelda Marcos led the Kilusang Bagong Lipunan ticket for Metro Manila against the Laban ticket that included Ninoy Aquino, Nene Pimentel, Alex Boncayao, and Charito Planas. It was the first election I had ever voted in. Marcos and the KBL cheated shamelessly. It was not the first time they would do so, nor would it be the last. On April 6, 1978, Manila exploded in a noise barrage against the regime. Everywhere, cars, buses, and jeepneys honked their horns. From the slums of Manila to its gated villages, residents banged pots and pans. Many took to the streets and marched in protest, risking arrest and prison. It was unlike anything I had ever seen or heard before. I was hooked. History was being made, and I wanted to witness it. I wanted to be there when it happened. News has many uses, but to me, among the most important functions of journalism are its witnessing and catalyzing functions. Journalists are society's eyes and ears. Since ancient times, there have always been those who recorded events so others, in their own time, as well as in the future, would know what had taken place. In modern democracies, the witnessing role of journalists, what we call the reporting of the news, confers visibility and legitimacy to issues and events. Anything that is reported is no longer secret or known only to a few. The information enters the public space and becomes part of public discourse and the political process. Today, we stand at the cusp of monumental changes in the media landscape. Radical life and society-changing transformations in technology, workflow, organizational structures, and business models are overturning the world of the media as we have known it for the last 100 years. These changes present new challenges and new opportunities for greater public access to information as well as citizen involvement. More than anything, they magnify the importance of information and communication in public life. The news and opinion that journalists produce allow citizens to make informed decisions about whom to vote for, what reforms to demand, even what to buy. But more than that, throughout the world, and indeed throughout Southeast Asia, journalists help build nation and community. In many countries in our region, including ours, the founding fathers were journalists. Jose Rizal and the propagandists of the 19th century wrote for clandestine newspapers. Aung San, the leader of the independence movement in Burma, and the father of the currently jailed leader and Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, was the editor of a crusading campus newspaper. As a young man working in Paris in the 1920s, Ho Chi Minh was editor, writer, and distributor, he was everything, of a journal he founded for colonial subjects living in France. After independence, the quest for freedom and democracy was inextricably linked to the press. In the Philippines, the Mosquito Press hounded Marcos out of power. In Indonesia, underground newspapers did the same to Suharto in the late 1990s. In Thailand, newspapers took a stand against the military junta in 1992. While journalists have also supported dictatorship and resisted reforms, in the last 100 years, important sectors of the press have served as an enabler of people's movements for independence, democracy, and social justice. The media provide voice to those involved in these struggles. They legitimize the demands of social movements by publicizing their causes and their successes. The media tell the public what they ought to be concerned about and what they can do. In pivotal moments, as in EDSA in 1986, and again, in 2001, the media, Radio Veritas in the case of People Power One, and television and mobile phones in the case of EDSA II, helped mobilize the crowds that toppled a president. For sure, the instances when reporting has such a direct, powerful, and immediate impact on the political process are few and far between. But journalism derives its power precisely from the possibility that such impact can take place. As long as information is publicly available, those in public life quake in the knowledge that someone, somewhere, is paying attention. As the US media scholar Michael Shudson says, even if the public is absent, the assumption of the public presence makes all the difference. The news gains its power, he says, not in its direct impact on audiences, but in the belief that the knowledge of citizens can, from time to time, be effective. I have been a professional journalist now for about a quarter of a century. During that time, I have seen many crimes committed in the name of journalism. Crimes against truth, crimes against the public interest. But I have also seen what journalism can do and what it can become. I have glimpsed its greatness and its potential. That is why journalism for me is a romance. It may not always live up to one's expectations, but when it's good, it can be the most wonderful thing there is. This campus was where I experienced the romance of journalism for the first time. And I was certainly not alone. Generations of UP students, many of whom have filled or now occupy important positions in the mainstream media, cut their journalistic teeth in UP. The intellectual stimulation and freedom that the university provided, even during the worst and most repressive years of Marcos, meant that UP was a haven for free thought and for free expression. The freedom to think, to innovate and experiment is particularly important in the age of information, where the societies that will thrive best are those that are able to adjust to the demands of the globalized knowledge economy. The new economy puts a premium on creativity, innovation, and information. It is my hope that this great university can be the incubator of innovations and the producer of the workers that the knowledge economy needs. I do not mean only call center employees, but IT engineers, programmers, web developers, knowledge entrepreneurs, world-class professionals and scientists, and of course, also savvy multimedia journalists able to help build nation and community in the global age. For many years, in popular movements, the UP community, popular movements, and the media have been focused on toppling regimes. And rightly so. The Philippines, like its neighbors, Thailand and Indonesia, have been held in thrall for so long by corrupt and tyrannical heads of states. The intellectuals, civil society activists, and journalists in these countries have understandably expended their energies in propelling people power. The truth is that we have been more successful in toppling old regimes than in reforming new ones. The challenge for all of us is how to channel the energies of people power so we can bring the majority of our citizens into the information age and help them succeed in the knowledge economy. This requires not only the transfer of knowledge and skills, but also laying the foundations for a more inclusive democracy. It means engagement both in political contestation, but also in finding new models for the society we want to become. The old utopian visions, whether it is that of a socialist or free market utopia, no longer suffice in the complex, networked, and interconnected world we live in today. Certainly, that vision ought to include a more participatory and meaningful democracy, accountable government, and a vibrant economy that provides opportunities, especially to those social sectors that have traditionally been excluded from the benefits of economic growth. Information can be the catalyst of a dynamic process that engages citizens in the creative and monumental undertaking of building a nation in the era of globalization. The media plays a key role in this endeavor, but so do the universities and the public at large. Today, we are witnessing seismic shifts in the media landscape. The ground is moving beneath our feet. The gatekeepers of news and information are losing their power. With the internet, they can no longer control what people read or restrict people from publishing on their own. Indeed, the whole definition of the journalist and of journalism is evolving. A participatory revolution is taking place. In addition, the business models that have supported journalism as we know it, circulation plus advertising, are being challenged by the internet, where the news and information are largely free, and where advertising cannot pay for the costs of news production. This means we will have to find new ways of funding the journalism that matters. Increasingly, the audience, especially the young people, are getting their news no longer from newspapers or television, but from the internet. Today, 1.1 billion of 6 billion people on this planet are connected to the web. and the numbers are expected to increase dramatically in the coming years. As of June 2008, Technorati, the search engine of blogs, was tracking 113 million blogs globally. Blogs, as you know, are regularly updated journals published on the web. They have changed the internet paradigm because they allow open conversation between writer and reader. There has never been, in the history of humanity, so much journalism being produced as there is today. And in such diverse formats, from one-line news updates to long-form, in-depth, multi-part, multimedia investigative reporting. Not in the last 100 or so years, when we saw the rise of professional journalism and mass circulation newspapers, has the cost of producing and disseminating news been so affordable, nor has news production been so efficient. Today, anyone with a computer connection, with an internet connection, a computer and a web page or a blog can be a publisher and potentially have a worldwide audience. Anyone with a video recorder can be a broadcaster simply by posting her video on YouTube. With applications like Twitter, anyone with a cell phone can beam the news via SMS instantaneously to the world. Today, 3 billion people, nearly half of all humanity, own mobile phones. Mobile phones are expected to be the new information platform after television and the personal computer. Soon, most people will be getting access to the internet through their phones, and this can have profound effects on the way we produce and consume news. Earlier this month, an earthquake hit Los Angeles. The report of the event was posted on Twitter. The news sent by an LA resident 9 minutes earlier than the first professionally produced news bulletin. Twitter is a free social networking and microblogging service. You can send or get tweets via mobile phone or the web. CNN and the BBC are currently using Twitter to disseminate breaking news. The political campaign of the American Democratic Party nominee Barack Obama uses it as a publicity mechanism. And some universities in various parts of the world are employing the service to deliver information to their students. 2 weeks ago, the Olympic Games were in full blast, the Chinese government cracked down on dissidents. Through Twitter, Chinese blogger Zhu Shuguang let the world know he was being detained by officials. All these changes are coming at a time when news has never been more necessary to the functioning of our lives. In the past, communities could survive without a newspaper or a radio set. But today, farmers selling